This is your host Rob Marchand of Hunting Out Loud, and today we're going to be talking with Jason Jones. And so we kind of, any of y'all was listening yesterday to yesterday's episode, you know, we kind of briefed you on what we was going to be talking about today. So how you doing, Jason?
I'm doing pretty good. Yourself?
Well, I'm doing okay. I've had a pretty rough evening. My wife left me in charge of the baked spaghetti and I burned it while I was cleaning my gun. And then as I smelt the baked spaghetti burning, I laid my gun on her bed, which had oil all over it. So I got a double whammy. I'm not kind of. So I was glad you were able to come on this evening and get me out of trouble for at least an hour.
Right. Well, yeah, that's kind of normally my luck. But
well, what it is, you end up getting one of these air fryers. And I don't know if you guys use an air fryer or ever used one.
Nope. Excuse me. No, I never have.
I'll tell you what, that thing cooks fast. I mean, it's so, you know, you set it what you normally would set it for, and well, what happens tonight is what usually happens with us. We're pretty new at it, but anyway.
Got you.
You know, Jason, we had chatted back and forth about your post about bow hunting. Has bow hunting killed hunting? And of course, it was a question, and then you just kind of went down to there and made a lot of good points, I thought. Things that I never thought of until I read that. But, you know, just speak for myself. I can remember coming up with my grandpa when I was, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. I was raised on a farm, and, you know, he started me out with squirrel hunting and rabbit hunting and the groundhogs. And, you know, as I got a little older and, you know, 14, 15, and then able to drive at 16, it was no more deer camps because it was all bow hunting. And till today, you know, 44, bow hunting consumes all my time. So, you know, and I understood exactly what you're saying. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I guess first let me preface it by saying that I absolutely love bow hunting, and no way was I trying to disparage bow hunting. And what made me write that post was, I read an article that was shared on another page that that said that crossbows were killing archery. And it got me thinking that if we're going to say that crossbows are killing archery, then why can't we say that archery is killing hunting? Because if you look at the time that from what I've read, that our hunter numbers have steadily declined since 1982, which is just about the same time that archery, you know, just really took off in popularity, and people transitioned from being casual bow hunters to, or let me say, from hunters who bow hunted to bow hunters. That most of us, once we started bow hunting, we don't really hunt a lot of other things anymore. We focus on bow hunting, which I understand why. I mean, it's a great time to be in the woods. It's, you know, solitary. You get to really focus on a particular animal a lot of times, and you get to, you know, it's different. But when I was a kid, bow hunting was relatively new. I'm a little bit older than you. I'm 47. I'll be 48 next month. And so, and I started hunting, I guess, well, when I was 12 is when, in Michigan, you're old enough to hunt back then. You had to be 12 years old. And so I started hunting when I was 12. And of course, my very first hunt was October 20th. Our traditional family pheasant hunt, where my uncle came up from down in the Detroit area, and we had some friends that came over from the west side of the state, and my grandpa would come over, and it was a pheasant hunt. It was a family affair, and it was, hunting used to be a social event, and then since we started really bow hunting, it became more of a solitary event. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that whatsoever. But I'm just saying that I really believe that there's probably a correlation with the decline in hunter numbers and the increase in popularity of bow hunting, just simply because it's not as social as it used to be, and we're not doing nearly as good a job recruiting new hunters as we used to.
Well, I agree 100%. You know, I never really looked at it that way, but I mean, bow hunting is king now. I mean, everybody loves to bow hunt. I love to bow hunt. We all love to bow hunt.
Right.
But like you said, it's just it's a solo deal. for the most part.
You know? Right. Yeah, I mean, go ahead. Oh, I was gonna say, even if you do go hunt bow hunt with your buddies, you don't go sit in the same tree. It's even if you're going to a bow camp, it's still a solitary event, bow hunting.
It is. Well, and on top of that, I was just thinking, just using myself for an example, and I love to introduce kids or anyone to the woods. But you know what? I only have a limited amount of farms. I still knock on doors to get places to hunt, or I hunt public lands. But if I'm going to take a kid or a new person, I'm terrible about, I have to find a different place to take them, and that's awful. I don't want to ruin my bow hunting spot. And, this is, like you said, it's just where we're at, and it's what it is. And it was a great post, and I think it opened a lot of eyes. And I know, that you wasn't saying that bow hunting was killing the sport. I understood completely, and a lot of the guys my age understood.
Right.
But I know that a lot of these younger guys, and I'm saying in their 20s up into their 30s, I mean, that's all they've known is just bow hunting. That they didn't get the deer camps and the squirrel hunting and the rabbit hunting and all that stuff. So
right.
I do wonder about the generation after these guys right here. I mean, who's going to fill their shoes? I mean, it makes you wonder. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I guess, I mean, how are we going to pass on the tradition from here? I mean, when I was young, when you were young, we learned it from someone most likely in our family. I might've been a little different because I didn't grow up with a dad and I didn't have anyone in the beginning to teach me I would have been 8 years old, and my mom was, at this time, I hadn't had any father figure in my life. My grandpa, he was a workaholic, and he didn't even get to spend much time with us. So I didn't have any father figure in my life. And my mom started dating a guy, and we lived in a townhouse, and there was a big vacant field behind it. And I was probably, like I said, 8 years old. I was in second grade. I know that. And he took me out there. He went hunting, and he took me with him. And I think what was significant about that for me, and what I guess that's what probably started my love for hunting, and it's never waned one bit since then. But and I don't mean to sound, like sappy or whatever, but that was the very first time an adult male had paid one lick of attention to me and wanted to involve me in anything. And that was my introduction to hunting, and that was also my introduction to bonding with a father figure type person. And so, and then he was in our lives for another, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, and he's who, then he bought a farm, and we moved down to the farm with him. And then that's where I started to learn about hunting and learning about wildlife. And I mean, because, well, if you grew up on a farm, every chance we had, we were in the woods, whether we were trying to cut down trees, we took a little crosscut saw, my brother and I, and took it out there, and we cut down a bunch of popple trees, and we started trying to build this log cabin, which all we did was cut down a bunch of trees and leave a saw in the woods. But, I mean, it was, and then, but so then we hunted all the time on the farm there. And then we started looking forward to the things that came along with hunting, which the main thing was deer camp. It was a rifle hunting deer camp, Northern Michigan. Everybody went to Northern Michigan, went to a deer camp. There were small deer camps, big deer camps, but it was a tradition, and friends and family, they all got together, and it was a big social event. And then we started bow hunting. We started bow hunting earlier in the year. Once you started bow hunting, then you weren't squirrel hunting anymore, because that's when you were bow hunting. And so we just kind of quit small game hunting as a society. And I don't know, I guess I ramble a lot, but we're just not the social aspect of hunting changed when bow hunting became the prevalent means of hunting.
Yeah. So it most definitely did. I mean, that's just the truth of it. I mean, it's what's happened to me. It's, this year last year I started predator hunting or tried to coyote hunt down here just to kind of fill the time.
Right.
To turkey season. But really, turkey season's just something to fill the time until I start, you know, scouting again midsummer,
right,
for deer.
Yeah. So
it chews up a chunk of time. Oh. And instead of, you know, like planning some hunts, you know, rabbit hunts or something this
right.
winter, or like you said, all the social things that we used to do, it's definitely not there. And these younger guys in their mid-20s, and it's like you said, it's not wrong, or no one's wrong or nothing. That's just what people love to do. It's their passion for it. But it's definitely took a turn, and I don't know.
Yeah. Even the pursuits that you say that you use to fill in the time until you deer hunt again, I mean, you're turkey hunting and you're coyote hunting. And those are very similar, yeah. I mean, to bow hunting. They're primarily solitary sports, or you might do it with a partner or something, you know. But you're not going out with five or six guys and driving a cornfield and, you know, trying to flush some pheasants, or you're not, you know, taking two or three kids out and trying to fill a game bag full of squirrels or whatever. And you're not, you know, it's – and like I said, I mean, that's not – good or bad, but to blame other things within our sport for the decline of our sport. The article that I originally read was talking about crossbows killing archery. And like I said, I mean, if crossbows are killing archery, then bow hunting is killing hunting, because it's not crossbows killing archery. It's not bow hunting killing hunting. It's us as hunters not doing enough to promote the sport in the proper way, to recruit young hunters, to introduce them to things other than maybe just bow hunting. I mean, and then that's another thing. And when I say this, I kind of say it, I don't really know how to say it, because what archery has done, especially in the last few years for my family, is absolutely amazing. I mean, if anybody follows what we do, what has happened because of archery, because of hunting in my life, in my son's life, and my whole family's life, is absolutely amazing. And I don't think you could write a better fairy tale. But
yeah, definitely.
With that being said, I don't even know where I was going with that thought now.
Well, I mean, I think I know maybe where you're going, and it's just – and I'm just going to be honest about it, the way I feel, and I might make some people mad at me or whatever, but just if you all would just open your minds and think about this, I love hunting. Jason loves hunting. We all love bow hunting. It's what we're talking about here. But as hunting as a whole, I mean, with the numbers dropping the way they have for so long, it's, to be honest with you, the bow hunting part of it that we all love so much, and that's you know, that's what I dedicate my time to. And I think we're just maybe as hunters as a whole, a little bit more selfish than what we used to be with our time because of the bow hunting, right. Because of the time it takes to be successful. And, you know, okay, I'll bow hunt Kentucky, then I'll bow hunt Ohio, and next year I'm hoping to bow hunt Kansas. So, you know,
right.
I meet up with it, but also, you know, what am I giving back to my sport without introducing kids and to the sport? One question I wanted to ask you, Jason. I mean, what are they saying? I mean, how are they saying, what's the deal with crossbows? I mean, why would they even think, or how would crossbows even affect archery hunting? I mean, what was their?
I don't think it was. I think they were saying that I read the article on Bow Junkie, and I think it was a lot of Pete Shepley from PSE, I guess, introduced the first, you know, readily available commercial crossbow. And then they pushed for inclusion, you know, into the archery season. And they're saying that if they had to do it over again, they wouldn't, because allowing crossbows into the archery season basically has really affected the archery industry, because people don't buy as many products. And you know, it's not as renewable as a product. Yeah, it's more of a monetary concern, but I mean, it's not reducing the numbers of hunters. If anything, at this time when it's harder to recruit hunters than ever, it's making it easier to recruit new hunters. And the bottom line is, we need whoever we can that's in the woods hunting legally and ethically to be in the woods hunting legally and ethically, no matter what their weapon of choice is.
I'm with you, and every hunter out there should be 100% behind that. And you know, a crossbow, for one, you know, you're around archery all the time. I see you guys shoot ASA and stuff, and you know, I haven't shot ASA since 2004. I've been raising my kids, but my last son's about to graduate, so I'm going to start back into the ASA this year. Hopefully I see you guys, get to meet you guys in person. But and shoot, now see, I'm scattered brain. I about forgot where I was going. But
right.
But what I'm saying is that for the hardcore guys or most people that archery hunt, you shoot a lot, and you know, you have to shoot a lot. Well, you know, with everybody crunched for time nowadays, it, you know, a crossbow is a good thing for some people that can't sit out there and shoot all day on the weekend or two or three times or have a place to shoot, you know, right, in the backyard or something like that. So, I mean, you need to practice with your crossbow, no doubt. I don't know if you need to practice with it as much as you do your compound, is what I'm trying to say. So it might just be
right,
a little better deal there. But, you know, everybody complains about, I can put something on social media and I'll have 50 people dislike it and 50 people like it. You just, that's just the way it is, I guess. I like to look at things with open. But, you know, talking about introducing people to the outdoors, I mean, here's just a couple of things I was thinking of. Of course, the obvious, the rabbit hunting and squirrel hunting. But, you know, there's, I thought back about some things that we done in shooting trap. I mean, that was something that, and it was a social thing that the family got together and shot trap, and it's pretty inexpensive. And I mean, I think that'd be something good for people to, you know, introduce anyone to the outdoors, whether it's a grown up or youth. Is there some things right, that you, Jason, that you could think about, you know, getting kids or someone new into the outdoors?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think any of the shooting sports that you can get involved in, you know, if they're trap shooting or skeet shooting or whatever it is, and I don't know much about either one of them. My extent of skeet shooting is we used to buy a couple boxes of clay pigeons and throw them out in the pasture, you know, and shoot the heck out of them, or miss the heck out of them most of the time. But, but you know, I mean, archery, once again, I mean, go back to archery. Archery is, in my opinion, the absolute perfect family sport. I mean, because it's something that from the youngest kid, you can take a 4-year-old and there's a class a 4-year-old can shoot in, and then you can take a 90-year-old and there's a class a 90-year-old can shoot in, and then you can take a kid who's on life support who shouldn't be shooting at all, and they'll let him shoot in a class against all the arguably the best 3D crossbow shooters in the world. And in archery, everybody has a chance to compete. Everybody has a chance to be a champion. You know, I mean, the chance is there, and it's not necessarily based on physical ability. It's archery's way more mental than it is physical, if you ask me. But and you know, getting back to the, and I mean, Austin obviously shoots in the crossbow class, and the crossbow class is growing. But a lot of times, I notice that the bow hunters specifically, and I'm one of them, because I read posts and guys that don't agree with me or something about, you know, methods or you know, front of center or whatever it is, I get offended because people don't agree with me. We're all so kind of touchy when it comes to bow hunting, where it's like so personal to us that, you know, I tried looking for small game hunting today, and for one, there's hardly any, and two, when you do go on them, there's no bickering. But we're bickering way too much amongst ourselves over stupid stuff, you know, just because we have different opinions on something, we wind up, you know, and I'm guilty. I'm guilty of all these things that I'm saying are bad. You know, I haven't, I started out small game hunting and traditional deer camps. And then, at a point where, well, in 1988, my brother was killed in a hunting mistake. I was 17 and he was 14. And, so I had a few years after that where, you know, I didn't gun hunt at all. I just bow hunted. And that's kind of where my transition into bow hunting kind of went away from the traditional small game hunting, you know. Even though my situation was, it was exactly what I'm trying to promote. There were six of us hunting, but we made a mistake. We made a horrible mistake. We didn't take the time to make sure that everybody knew what we were doing. We flushed a woodcock. It landed. We were excited. We were young. We were teenagers, and we wanted to kill it. And we made a horrible mistake. But that has nothing to do with really why I'm trying to promote, you know, that kind of hunting, because regardless of what happened that day, we were all out there, we were bonding. It was, you know, it was a social thing. It wasn't, sure. And, you know, and then once I started bow hunting, I did a horrible job with my kids growing up. You know, my oldest son, he killed his first deer, his first day bow hunting when he was 12. luckily he's a small game hunting fool, but that wasn't so much because of me. That was just kind of something that he took on his own. You know, I haven't pheasant hunted in years. I haven't seriously rabbit hunted or squirrel hunted. I couldn't tell you when the last time I shot a limit of squirrels. And when I was young, when I was 17, I bragged. That was my biggest bragging moment, was being able to shoot a limit of squirrels. I had this sweet Winchester 22 mag model 783, I think, that my mom bought for me for my 17th birthday. And for the next probably 4 or 5 years running, opening day of squirrel season, I shot 5 squirrels every day, and I shot 5 times, and I made 5 headshots. And I mean, that was a huge accomplishment to me. And that's, to me, that's, I remember that more than any deer I've shot. Well, I say that, but I haven't shot any substantial deer. Maybe if I had, then my whole conversation here would be different, but, but it's just
hunting and get, like I said, your concern is with the numbers, and I understand that completely. That's the way I feel. And, you know, you talking about that 22, I was, now you got me thinking back, of course, here the last couple of days. I had a nylon 66 22. You ever hear one of those?
Oh, nylon 66? Yeah, they were ugly as could be.
It was terrible looking one. Yeah. Ugly. Oh, gosh. And I had that, and you know, I'd kill them squirrels and cut the tails off. It was a Remington. And then, yep. Of course, I, you know, back then, you know, yeah, I would take my squirrel tails to school. That was show and tell.
Yeah,
you know, I was excited, and you know, I was talking to my son there the other day, and you know, of course, when we was in school, back when I was in school, I mean, everybody hunted. The teachers were hunting.
Yeah,
and just the principal, just everyone, and you know, I talked to my son Greg, is his name, and you know, I said, how many kids at your school hunt? And they was like, Dad, you know, they think that you're some kind of wild mountain man or something, just because I hunt and because he hunts.
Right.
He said hardly anyone, and that's odd. I mean, and I'm talking about Eastern Kentucky, so you know,
yeah,
it's just, it's, things have definitely changed, and where will they be 20 years from now? So I don't know.
If we don't, I mean, we got to do everything we can to get kids involved in hunting. We got to quit worrying about how someone else hunts, because I mean, that's just become incredibly rampant. We got to quit worrying about what someone else shoots. I mean, I like big deer. I've never shot a big deer. I don't know if I ever will, because I'm not probably driven enough. I got too many other things going on that make me happy, you know. But I know that guys love big deer, and I don't blame them. But we need to start hunting more things, you know. I mean, we need to. And I know there's lots of people that rabbit hunt. There's lots of people that pheasant hunt. But it used to be everybody rabbit hunted, and everybody pheasant hunted, and everybody deer hunted, and everybody, you know, if it was legal to hunt, we hunted it. And yeah, we'd get together with some buddies after school. Heck, I had a FIE single shot 20 gauge. I used to break that down and take it in my duffel bag to school so I could go over to my buddy's house after work or after school hunting. And, you know, my biology teacher, Mr. Murky, he knew that. We used to sit in biology class and talk for the whole hour with our biology teacher. He was from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and he would tell us hunting stories all the time. And, you know, it was fascinating. And then, you know, I got extra credit because I brought in my first red fox that I ever trapped. I got extra credit for bringing that in. You know, it's things are different now. Now, if a kid trapped a red fox, holy cow, can you imagine what would happen? <It's> probably
and see, oh my goodness, he'd be toast, you know. And,
yeah,
you talk about getting bullied, you know. And see, there's something else right there that comes into play. I feel like, I mean, you know, how many kids 13 years old or 14 years old go to school and around here or something, like even around here at my house, and sharing pictures of their deer or something like that. I mean, it's just not what it used to be.
No.
That could play a big part. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, kids are not interested in video games. I mean, heck, there was video games when I was in my teens. I mean, they didn't like what they are now, but it was a big deal back in those days.
Right.
It's just, I don't know what the answer is. And it's definitely something to talk about. And I think you brought up a good point with the whole time consuming with the bow hunting. You know, not that it's wrong, but it is time consuming. And that's,
yeah,
that's where everybody's interest is right now.
Right.
So,
well, yeah, we need to quit fighting against each other. Start, you know, doing everything we can to promote hunting, period. It doesn't matter if we hunt differently than each other. You know, and crossbows aren't killing archery. Archery's not, bow hunting's not killing hunting. It's lack of hunter recruitment. It's the changes in society. It's, you know, people getting further and further removed from where their food comes from. And, you know, I mean, half the kids nowadays have no clue even where, you know, a McDonald's hamburger comes from, let alone, you know, delicious wild game. So,
well, you know, I love when I see some, you know, people who get on there and, you know, I know, you know, some people and they have trust issues, but they'll go to McDonald's. I'm like, geez,
right?
You have trust issues, but you let some buddy you don't even have a clue of fix your food for you.
I tried feeding. I made some venison chili for a mud bog in or elk chili, and my buddy's wife, who was putting on a mud bog, she wouldn't do it. She wouldn't eat it. But she was eating those hot dogs and hamburgers that she, you know, pre-made hamburger patties that she bought at the store, and hot dogs that she bought at the store. And gosh, who knows what's in that? But
oh my goodness,
yeah.
No way, you know, if my wife would bring home burger from Kroger's or something. I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but I just can't do it.
Right.
I mean, I'm so used to using venison, deer burger, what I call just deer burger.
Right.
I like the taste of it better, and I mean, it's healthier anyways from what I understand. And plus, like you say, I know where that came from, and I know it's clean.
Right. But my wife, she hasn't been able to eat beef in probably like 5 or 6 years just because it started making her sick every time she ate it. And, you know, it was always store-bought beef. She can eat any wild game there is. I mean, you know, we got elk and bison and whitetail and mule deer in the freezer, and she can eat any of that. But if she even eats just a little bit of beef from the store, and I don't know if it's how it's processed, how it's raised, you know, if it's antibiotics that it's in it or what, but
it's just so greasy. I mean, it makes me sick, I think, just because it's so greasy. You know, you could say you fry some venison. I've never had elk or a buffalo or anything, but you know, if you fry deer meat, venison or whatever you call it, it just doesn't have any grease to it.
No, you
put some burger down that pan and fry it, and it's from the store, it's popping all over the place.
Yeah, but, yeah, for sure.
So how's the bison taste? Or,
oh, it's delicious. This was the bull Austin killed. It was a pretty old bull. I'm not sure how old it was exactly, but it was pretty old. So it's a little tough, but it's bison is it's really good, but it doesn't have a whole lot of flavor. It's and a lot of that comes back to like a beefsteak, you know. I mean, a good beefsteak tastes delicious, and a lot of that's because of the fat in it. Well, the bison doesn't have any fat like, you know, like a cow does, or and same thing with elk. Elk is delicious though. Elk has a lot of flavor, but once again, it's a super super lean meat, so there's no fat in it. You know, if you make elk burger or something, usually you gotta mix something with it. You know, my wife a lot of times she'll make like a meatloaf burger, you know, make it just like meatloaf, but patting it to a burger with elk or whatever, or venison, just because it helps it stay together. But it's incredible. It's, I don't know. I think elk is probably right up there with my favorite. We went down to some friend's house in North Carolina over Thanksgiving, and our buddy Sam, he shot a moose in Newfoundland. And so we had some moose. And that was delicious. I hear moose is probably the best out of all of them, but I've never been able to eat a significant amount of it. You know, I sure would like to, but and then
I'd love to. You know, when I was younger, let's see, one of my first jobs, I had to travel, and they sent me. First place I had to go was Fort Kent, Maine, and that's I don't know if you know where Fort Kent, Maine is, but it's right up. When I look out my window, I was looking into Canada.
Nice.
So, of course, at that time, I was already eat up with hunting and stuff. And I happened to be there during moose season, which I've never seen a moose until then, of course. I've been hooked and wanted to get a moose ever since then. And I know they had a gas station, so that was their check-in station. And they would just pull them moose around through there, weigh them, and do everything. I sit down there. I missed work for 2 days at that check-in station.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, that's when they Michigan here, they have a limited elk hunt. Well, you guys got pretty good elk in Kentucky, but we have
– Yeah, you have to draw for them, yeah.
Yeah, that's how it is here in Michigan. There's I think there's about a – well, there's maybe close to 200 tags a year that they give out. Because we have an early season and a late season. But same thing when – when, you know, they have the elk check-ins at the DNR station and whatever, that's just pretty cool to see because it's not something that you see every day around here, you know. It's not like out west where they're killing elk, you know, by the thousands.
Yeah. We, you know, Jason, back in that, and I'm kind of flip-flopping around here on you, but it's just, you know, where you're at in Michigan. When I was young, or, well, in the 90s, it seemed like Michigan was one of the big buck states. And maybe I'm just wrong, how's the population up there now? Or
as far as deer or people?
Yes, as far as your deer. Yeah.
We still have – we have a great deer herd, in my opinion. I mean, and everything that I'm saying here is my opinion because I don't know if I have any facts to back anything up. But yeah. Our deer herd's still really good. I mean, I can go – I hunt mostly public land because I don't have access to private land or I don't go and get access to it, I guess. I feel weird asking someone to hunt their land that they're working hard and paying taxes and all that stuff, you know? So, but in Michigan we have, I don't know how many acres of public land we have, but we have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of acres of public land, I would believe, between our national forest and state lands and all that. And, I can go out on my public land near me any night of the week and, you know, and I'll see deer every night. My oldest son, he hunts a spot not far from the house here. And it was a few years ago, and they weren't mature bucks, but on opening morning of firearm season, he saw 12 different bucks. So there's a lot of deer here. And the mentality, the mindset, a lot of people are pressing for antler point restrictions and whatnot. And I'm kind of indifferent. I'm on the fence. I really don't care one way or another. I guess I'm not for it or against it. The only thing I'm against is people being against people for being whatever they're for, if that makes sense.
Yes, I'm right with you on that. Drives me nuts.
I think I would enjoy it eventually if antler point restrictions were put in because then all the deer that I've seen would probably be bigger, you know. But to the same respect, and I haven't shot a buck in quite a few years, but, you know, I shot a lot of little bucks that made me happy as could be, you know. So, and people say, oh, well, yeah, wouldn't you be happier killing a big buck? Not necessarily. Sometimes, you know, to me, it's more about the memory, you know. I mean, the moment, the circumstances, what's happening, who I'm with and whatnot. It's about the hunt, about the hunt. And I mean, a hunt to different people means, you know, to say the hunt, it could mean a million different things if you ask a million different people, you know. I mean, to me, the hunt's something different than it is to you, and it's different to whoever it is. It's different. But it's – and I don't think that it's right necessarily to tell someone that, you know, they have to shoot something that's bigger or they can't, or maybe it is. I guess I – like I said, I'm kind of indifferent. I'll be happy with whatever happens here in Michigan. Like, in my area right now, they're trying to impose antler point restrictions on a few counties and kind of be a trial thing, you know, and I imagine eventually the whole state's going to go to it, you know, in several years. But if it doesn't, it's naturally going that way anyways, because like we're talking the younger guys coming up bow hunting and being deer hunting specific, bow hunting specific, it's gotten so much more personal. And the deer that they, I mean, when I was young, nobody ever named a deer. You know, I mean, we weren't that intimate with deer. We weren't that intimate with the deer. We were more that intimate with hunting itself, if that makes sense. Now,
a lot of sense.
And now it's just, I don't know. It's just changed so much. And like we both said, it's neither right nor wrong. It's just different. You know, it's way different now than it was, you know, but it was way different in 1980 than it was in 1990, and it was way different, you know, in 1940 than it, you know, it's hunting's evolved as we've evolved, you know. We don't, you know, a lot of guys argue and complain about equipment and things like this, and you know, it's, I don't know, advances in technology. Someone's made the argument on a QDM page here that about we want to limit the antler point restrictions, but why don't we limit the equipment that people can use? Once again, referring to crossbows. But yeah. And then that, and when I wrote that post the other day, I hadn't thought about that stuff beforehand. You know, it just, I read that article and it just happened, you know, and I just started thinking about it. And then when this person wrote that post about crossbows and how they've increased the ability, you know, and now, you know, archery hunting is no longer a, you know, 20-yard game. It's a 100-yard game or 40 or 50 or 60 or whatever it is, you know. It doesn't matter. But then to the same respect, the same people who are against crossbows in archery season have upped their odds by tenfold because all of a sudden we're all farmers, you know. Everybody's growing food plots and doing things differently than what we did. I mean, so I don't know how we can say anything affects hunting more than anything else. It's just,
well,
everything's changing.
I tell you, Jason, my opinion, and more I've thought about this just the last 3 or 4 days, to be honest with you, I'm usually arguing against what's best for my interests.
Right.
You know, nowadays I like to hunt mature bucks. I like to hunt bigger bucks, but what I love more than anything is I love hunting, and I know that I'm not going to be able to hunt mature bucks and big bucks without people hunting, because there's not going to be any hunting. And I think everybody needs to understand that. It's already hard enough as it is to introduce someone into hunting in the outdoors without putting that, antler restrictions on these deers. Sure, they're going to be bigger, but take a young guy out there and make him wait for a big old monster buck before he even gets hooked to hunting. I mean, come on. You know, they can't be out there. And people say, well, let them shoot a doe. Just forget it, you know. I shot a five-pointer with my first buck. You know, you can look at my post, and I think I've shared a picture of 9 different basket rack bucks that I'm so thankful for, and I had a blast, and I had this much adrenaline rush out of shooting them as what I did one of these bigger bucks I have right here. And let people evolve as hunters on their own, at their own time, and people's losing sight of what it's all about. I mean, we can't all be quarterbacks on the football team. It just takes, you know, but it takes all of us to have a football game.
Right.
And
that's
kind of the way it is, the way I see it. And I just think people's losing sight. They're thinking about what's best for them personally and their own interest instead of what's best for the whole hunting in a whole, the sport itself. And that's really the bottom line. Am I wrong? I mean, I don't care if someone gets mad at me, but that's just really what it is.
No, that's exactly what it is. And I think we've lost sight of that. I mean, it was, like I said, I grew up without a dad, and then when I didn't have, between that point, well, actually, even when my mom did have her boyfriend, who kind of was, you know, for a while there, and that was, you know, not necessarily stellar, but it was still something. And he introduced me to hunting, and then my other way, and I said it a few times, but I was raised by like Gene Hill and, you know, H.D. Tapley is where I got all my tips, and, you know, and Patrick McManus. I was by the magazine writers as a kid, because I didn't have a dad growing up, so I would read those articles. And back then, the articles were hunting stories, you know what I mean? They weren't – now everything's how-to, you know, which, I mean, I love informative articles, but back then the predominant articles in the periodicals, the hunting magazines, were stories about a hunt. And now it's all about how to hunt. And so I think, you know, and hunting to me there's always been a romance with hunting. You know, I mean, we hunted with a guy out in Colorado 2 springs ago named Grant Atkinson. He's he's oh, he's in his 70s, but he's an outfitter, a guide out there, and he's exactly what when you were a kid and you pictured a Western hunter, an outfitter. He's exactly what you pictured. I mean, he's got that the cowboy hat, the you know the rugged good looks, the perfect smile. I mean, rides horses. He's a preacher. He's preached in over 50 countries. He's guided General Schwarzkopf and, you know, Lee and Tiffany and, I mean, all kinds of things. And when I was a kid, that's what you would read the magazines and you would read stories about guys like that, you know. And there was a romance to hunting where, you know, you used to long to go and be in the mountains or go on a horseback hunt. And now we long to go kill a 400-inch bull or, you know, a Boone and Crockett buck or whatever. It's different, know. You know.
It's just so much different.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but it just made me think of, you know, this season in Ohio, my son was a youth up to the age 17, so he was still a youth this year in Ohio, and I took him. He's so busy, but I got to take him out one day. And when we come out, there's a other young man there, and I've shared this story before, but he was probably 20, 21 years old or something, and he had known of me just through Facebook and seeing my pictures and stuff like that. So, you know, I asked him how his season was going. He's like, well, he said, I'm waiting on big ones. He said, I don't shoot nothing small. He said, I just wait on them 150s and 160s. And I was like, well, geez, he must have killed some big ones already. And nothing against him or nothing.
Right.
But it's just where the young guys are. So I asked him, I said, well, you know, let me see some pictures. You know, if you got any big buck pictures or whatever, just pictures of your bucks, you know. And I was thinking, gee whiz. And he showed me a picture of his one buck. And it was a great buck. It was an awesome buck. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, it was a 120-inch buck, which is awesome. It was great.
Right.
And I was like, oh, you know, that's nice. And I was thinking, why would you feel like, you know, you're 21 years old and you're saying you'll pass up 130 and 140-inch deer. And that's the state of, you know, that's the way a lot of these younger guys think. And
yeah.
I'm like, that's awful, I think. Am I wrong about that? I mean, I feel almost like, why would you think that way?
You know, yeah, I think that it's awful that we got to the point where 120-inch deer doesn't make your heart beat out of your chest. I mean, what's happened. It's to me, I mean, and like I said, I grew up hunting public land, northern Michigan deer camps, and in the 80s, I mean, if it was a legal buck, you shot it, and you were happy, and everybody around you was happy that you got your buck, you know? But, and I know the deer herd was out of whack when I was a kid, you know? It was crazy, and a lot of things have changed, and our deer herd's way better and way more in balance than it was. I'm sure it's nowhere near in balance, but it's way better than it was when I was a kid, you know? I'd see, you know, and when I was a kid, we could shoot one buck, and you could apply for a doe tag, but hardly anybody got one, and you know, and that's just the way it was. But you went out and you went hunting, and, you know, if you got a buck, people congratulated you. And most of the time, you didn't even ask what it was, you know. Did you get your buck? Yeah. All right. Good job. And now it's, like you said, you know, kids are passing up what could be a deer of a lifetime. How do you know if you pass up that 120-inch deer that you're ever really going to get a chance at another one? I mean, you know, it's – I don't know.
Like that kid right there, he was 21. He's what I was thinking in my head. I mean, he's never killed 130 or 140. And that 120-something-inch buck that he had a picture of was a great buck. It was something to celebrate, like you say.
Right.
I don't know what he felt like he needed to say. You know what I mean? It was just like, that's the thing you have to say nowadays. I felt like.
Yeah, everybody prefaces their post with, oh, I know he's not the biggest.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, it drives me crazy. Listen, I come from old school like you, and I loved it back in the day when I killed a deer. It may have been a basket rack, but it also may have been a 14-pointer because if you could ring it or hang a ring on it, it was a point.
Right.
You know, so I went to school as a 14-pointer. It might have been 10 inches wide or whatever. That didn't matter. It was a 14-pointer.
Right.
You know, that was fun, and I miss that.
Yeah. When I was a kid, we had three stations, ABC, NBC, and CBS, and then we had our PBS station, and there's a show called Michigan Out of Doors, and when I was a kid, it was a host by the name of Fred Trost, and there were, and the show was on 52 weeks a year, and there were probably 3 or 4 deer hunting episodes, maybe more, maybe a half dozen, or maybe even a dozen deer hunting episodes throughout the year. And the rest of the time, it was all the other outdoor activities. You know, it was squirrel hunting, it was rabbit hunting, it was pike spearing, it was, you know, crappie fishing. It was, you know, whatever you could do, you know, in the outdoors. And it was, and now, I mean, when was the last time you turned on a hunting show and watched a rabbit hunt and were excited about it? You know, I mean, and well, I'm sure if you know,
you don't ever see them, very rarely do you see a rabbit posted on Facebook, someone killed, like you said, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's, I don't know. To me, you know, it takes a lot of skill to go and kill a limit of rabbits, you know? Sure, it's not like killing a Boone and Crockett buck, but, well, I say that, I've never killed a Boone and Crockett buck, but I have killed a limit of rabbits, and I like it, you know?
Yeah, and, I know.
And
it's hunting. Like you said,
yeah, it's hunting, and that stuff, it's more interactive. It gives us a chance to bring kids into it a little more, I think, you know, and lets them relax.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, this kid's pressured to kill a 150 inch deer at 21 years old.
I know. I was blowing my mind. I was like, oh, I didn't know what to say to him. I was like, well, good luck, buddy.
Yeah. Everybody's worried about what everybody thinks about what they kill, but if it makes your heart race and it makes you happy and it, you know, and it gets you outdoors, the bottom line is whether I like what you kill, whether you like what I kill, whatever it is, no matter how I hunt, no matter how you hunt, no matter how anybody hunts, as long as it's legal and ethical, we need them out there, because there's only, I was reading that in 2015, we were down to 10.1 million hunters in this country. And I'm not exactly sure how many people we have in the country, but that's a very, very small percentage. And then if we're not recruiting new hunters, you know, then we're losing ground by the moment, because right now the most dangerous person for us are non-hunters. It's not anti-hunters, because we know who they are.
Yeah.
You know, it's non-hunters, and it's the people that are on the fence that don't know if they like hunting or not, that, and then they get on Facebook and they see us fighting over ridiculous stuff. They see us fighting over whether, you know, whether we need antler point restrictions, whether we don't. And that's another thing too, that I think it's easier in some respects to introduce non-hunters into small game hunting, especially in today's culture, because if you're a non-hunter and you're kind of thinking, well, geez, I might want to try this hunting, and then your first experience with hunting is, well, no, you can't shoot him unless he's 5 and a half years old, because that's, we want him to reach a maturity level. And, you know, and then that, I mean, really, if you're a non-hunter and you're looking at someone who wants to grow a deer to 5 and a half years old, you're thinking, well, then this guy's hunting trophies. I mean, and I'm not saying that it is, and I understand people wanting to, I completely understand wanting to manage your deer herd and grow the most mature deer you can. I mean, I get it, but I'm a hunter, you know. These non-hunters were, you know, I think it would be easier to go up to a non-hunter and say, hey, you know, I was wondering if, you know, maybe you and your boys would like me to join me on a rabbit hunt this weekend, or, you know, or go pheasant hunting or something, you know. Just, we got to find a way to introduce the most people that we can to hunting as quickly as we can before we don't have hunting left.
And that's what this episode right here is all about. You know, that's what we're talking about more than anything. Just everybody just needs to kind of chill out. And we all argue way too much, like you said.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the animal hunters almost leave us alone for the point they see us arguing so much anymore and bickering.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're being self-destructed. In 1996 here in Michigan, and this is we almost lost bear hunting altogether. Because the bait hunters and the dog hunters couldn't come together and agree on that bear hunting was more important than either one of their methods, you know, and we almost lost bear hunting forever. And bear hunting is a great sport. Matter of fact, bear is Austin, my boy's favorite wild game to eat. He absolutely loves to eat bear. Yeah, it's delicious.
I've ate that before. I've never had that either, see?
Oh, it's delicious.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to try it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you can always apply here in Michigan. I was going to say, you can always apply here in Michigan. If not, we can always get over-counter third season tags. So, if you want to bear hunt, just let us know.
I will. I appreciate that. Well, you know, we've talked all about this, and we'll get off here in a few minutes. But I know you and Austin's always hunting all over the place, and he's took the bison and all kind of different things. You have any plans you'd like to share coming up here anytime soon, or is it ASA archery coming up? I said I know you and Austin, you know, are always hunting and stuff. I just didn't know if you had any hunts coming up or any things y'all planned or ASA this summer. Yeah. Anything like that you'd like to talk about?
Oh, yeah, we got a lot of stuff happening, I hope. You know, a lot of it depends on if I can figure out how to do it all. But, you know, because we got big dreams but really small pockets. So
I'm with you.
But we plan on, after Christmas, we're going to spend some time hunting in Missouri and Illinois. We got a couple places. We got a place in Missouri, good friends of ours that we hunt or that we shoot the ASA circuit with, Sammy Closser. He's got a place there that he lets us hunt. And we were down there just a few days ago. And then we got another buddy in Illinois that we hunt there. And there we're hunting mature deer. We're hunting the, you know, I mean, we got a shed from the one buck on the place that we're hunting in Illinois. The shed's 84 inches. So, yeah. And I mean, so we're hunting deer that we've never hunted before. We've just started hunting mature deer the last couple of years. And it's definitely addicting, and it's totally different than hunting little deer, but it's still hunting, you know? But I'm just as happy going here on my public land and trying to shoot a 3.5-year-old, you know, or even a 2.5-year-old, if any deer that gets my heart pumping. So we'll be hunting Illinois and Missouri, and then we're going to go to the ATA show go down there. I don't know if you make it down to that or not, but that's a good time.
Hopefully next year I can make it. I planned on it, but I think I'm a little too late this year.
Right. So then the ATA show, Austin wants to hunt a little more after that. It depends on if everything's dropped its antlers or not, because in Illinois, I think it goes to the 21st of January this year. So we're going to keep hunting until then, and then going to try to make it out to Las Vegas for the Grand Slam Club Ovis convention, because one of Austin's dreams, obviously, is to chase a super slam, you know, and so far he's got six species. And if we had a incredible mule deer hunt this year that kind of went bad on us, but otherwise he'd have seven species, because we hunted there after Arizona. And going to go to the convention, and then the following week is the Vegas shoot. So he's going to shoot in the Vegas shoot. And as a matter of fact, we were practicing tonight and out at the archery club near us, and it went pretty bad. So we got a lot of work to do before the Vegas shoot. But and then from Vegas, you know, he's going to do the full ASA circuit again this year, shoot all the pro-ams. You know, last year he finished on a pretty high note. I don't know, you know, how he's going to start the year, but he's going to work hard. And, you know, I know. And then we got a bunch of other cool things going on. He's dabbing a little bit in public speaking. He spoke at a church dinner earlier this year. And then and he's got some other options to do a couple of things. And then try to do whatever we can to get some kids out in the woods. It's this last year has been kind of eye opening to Austin and I. Speaking to kids and whatnot, we're part of this local team, Wheeling Team 457, which is really what was the catalyst into getting us into hunting as much together as what we are. Because I used to take Austin hunting. I mean, I grew up hunting and fishing and trapping and, you know, and my kids always have, but used to be that I'd get Austin out 10, 15 hours a year because it was hard. You know, he had his regular power chair. And I didn't know about all the things that were available. We went to a local show here that goes on every year here in Michigan called the Woods and Water Show. It's an outdoor show. Probably 25, 30,000 people attended over the weekend. And so we just showed up there. We'd bought our house where we moved here, and we went there and showed up on the weekend. And we met this guy named Ray Brown, and he runs this nonprofit called Wheeling Team 457. And so anyways, we met him. He introduced us to the track chair guys, and then things just kind of went crazy from there. And I don't even know where I was going with it, Robbie. Do you?
Oh, it's going good, but we was headed to the ASA.
Yeah, and geez.
Well, I was going to ask you, were you talking about the track chair? I met a guy, I don't know if you know who they are, the Outdoor Building Foundation. They're out of Alabama. Yeah. They ended up coming up here, and it's Scott Phillips and his son, Grayson Phillips, and Grayson has a high track chair. And I'd had him on not too long ago. Well, I'd met him a few years ago, and we just become friends, you know, and social media. But he was telling me his story about taking Grayson turkey hunting, and he was just like, "There's got to be a better way." And anyways, it kind of similar. They end up getting a high track chair, and I mean, them things are awesome. And then they came up with the Outdoor Ability Foundation, try to help, you know, kids getting outdoors with a high track chair. So anyhow, I didn't know
if you heard of them or not. But, I think I saw them when I scrolled through your, because I'll be honest with you, I'd never listened to your podcast. I'm pretty new to podcasts. I just started listening to them a couple months ago. And
I just started that thing up anyways.
Yeah, so I hadn't heard your podcast, and so I went scrolling through. And then I listened to your one from last night. And then it was kind of funny when you asked him if he knew who I was. And he's like, "Oh, Austin's dad." And that's kind of
how most people know you.
Yeah, Austin's dad. But, you know, it used to be.
Go ahead.
Years ago, I used to be Jason's dad, my oldest boy, you know, because he was a really good athlete, you know, and he'd pitch no hitters and hit back-to-back home runs and stuff like that. So I was always Jason's dad. And then my daughter, she had all kinds of girlfriends and stuff, and they were always, you know, so she was always the sweetest little thing. And so I was always Jade Lynn's dad. And now I'm just Austin's dad. But so if people say Jason, most people don't know who I am. But
yeah, you know. That's a compliment.
I remembered where I was going there with my last thought. So this last year, and we're talking about these things and whatnot and kids, and we had the opportunity through Wheeling Team. We met a boy named Charlie that we've known for a couple of years, probably 3 years. And just an amazing little boy, and had such drive. And he was actually too young last year to receive the elk license that Austin wound up getting transferred to him. And so that's how Austin's elk hunt happened. But I don't know. Anyways, we lost him this last summer to his disease. And then we just, in the last week or 2 weeks ago, we met another little boy someone was going to take him hunting, and then they weren't able to. And we got a hold and said that we could. And we went down. We were getting ready to go to Missouri. We were all loaded up, and we went down to meet Ben on Sunday. And he took Austin's track chair for a test drive, and then he wanted to borrow it. And he asked his mom if he could borrow it, you know, and then we talked to his dad, and we had the hunt set up for the 13th, and he wasn't sure, you know, if that was going to work because things weren't looking good or whatever. And so anyways, Austin wound up leaving his track chair there, and Ben was able to, when he took Austin's track chair for a test ride, his dad said that was the first time he'd smiled since Thursday, you know, so in 3 or 4 days. And I don't know. I don't know if I'd ever went, you know, a full day without seeing my kid smile at least once. So, but anyways, yeah. Austin left his track chair there for him, and he drove that track chair around. Well, the next morning, Austin's track chair quit on him, so we were able to get another one through our Wheeling Team. They let us use one, and we took it down to Ben and dropped it off to him, and then And then we were able to take him hunting on Thursday. And in between then, he was getting in the track chair a couple times every day and driving around. He'd lost his leg earlier in the summer due to his cancer. And so I mean, it was just that track chair is, for one, it was absolutely the thing that changed our lives the most out of anything that's any piece of technological equipment that we've come across. That thing absolutely changed our lives. It changed everything about what we're doing. And, you know, and Austin being able to get out there and people seeing what he's doing and whatnot. And then, I don't know, we got the opportunity to take him hunting. And then just the joy and happiness that he got just by being able to get out there and enjoy that, you know, a little bit, you know. And for someone who's at the point where it takes every single thing inside of them to be able to smile and, you know, just something as simple as being outdoors, you know, and we take that for granted so much and we fight over it. You know, it's just kind of insane when I sit there and think about it. This little boy, all he wanted to do was go hunt for one time in his whole life. And, you know, and he was able to, but, and we take it for granted every day, you know, and all of us do, you know, I do. I'm just as guilty as, and I'm probably more guilty than everybody because I shouldn't take it for granted because I got, you know, kind of a unique circumstance, but.
Yeah.
I don't know. We need to quit taking the outdoors for granted and we need to start treating it all with the respect that it needs to be. And we need to treat all the other hunters with the respect that we should treat them with, you know, cause we're all on the same.
We're all in it together.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's, and if you know, as well as I do, I mean, hunters are my favorite people to know and talk to. You know, I go to places where hunters congregate because, you know, you go to hunting shows and stuff because those are the people you like, and 95% of us are good people, you know, but we bicker over stupid stuff. It's crazy. Oh,
yeah. Hunting's great. I mean, we're sitting here talking right now over a podcast, which I never thought I'd do because of hunting, you know.
And yeah.
It's good. I enjoy meeting new people and getting to talk to you on the phone and hearing all this. So the bad thing about this phone deal is it usually starts to try to cut off after about an hour.
Right, so, right.
We'll kind of wrap it up. But I just want to tell you, Jason, you know, we come on to talk about a way to, you know, about the bows and introduce some new hunters and all this. And I want you to know, you know, I can speak for the people around here. You know, you guys inspire a lot of people to get in the woods. So you're kind of doing what you're talking about right here. You know, I just want to let you know that.
Well, I appreciate that. But
so, I mean, you know, it's just taking your kids outdoors and all of us taking the time to take our children outdoors. I know, you know, people could say the kids are not interested or they won't play video games. But if you take them out shooting trap one time, just give them a chance. And if they don't want to do it, they don't want to do it.
Oh, I got a grandson that – he just turned 6 years old and he'll outfish most grown men, you know, because that's what, you know, my son's got him in the woods, got him on the lakes, got him on the rivers, you know, and so it's pretty amazing what can happen if you just do it. So.
Yeah. Just give him a chance. Bluegill fishing, you know, like you said, just something with some action, rabbit hunting and
yeah,
all the small game stuff. And I feel like it's that's what we've been talking about. Not that, you know, I know there's guys out there that you're not interested in do it. And that's not the people we're talking to. We're talking about when you introduce someone, or I feel like that's what you're talking about. That's
oh, yeah, I'm absolutely. Yeah.
When you introduce someone, it's try the small game stuff or shooting skeet or bluegill fishing or, yeah, you know, just something instead of sitting there waiting on a 160-inch deer, because I know it's took me years and years and years. And I don't know how many people's going to wait that long.
Right. Or you know, if it's deer hunting that's your passion, start a traditional deer camp again, you know. Get guys to come spend a week in the woods, you know, at camp. And or, I mean, now it can be family camps. You know, when I was young, it was a man thing. But now family camps, because I love spending time with my wife and my daughter just as much as I do with my boys. And, you know, I'd love to have them with the woods all the time. So, I don't know. Just get out there and do it.
Archery, like you said.
Yeah.
ASA, or, you know, it seems like there's a – hometown ranges everywhere, you know, everyone's got local ranges and places you can shoot spots or Vegas shoots. And
yep,
there's a lot out there. I mean, it's not like there's not things to do for the whole family in the outdoors. So hopefully we just all keep it rolling and quit arguing over a spike or a 180-inch buck.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll see what happens. Hey, thanks, Jason. And good luck to you and Austin, and Merry Christmas to your all's family. And And hopefully we get to talk again soon. Anytime you all want to come on, just give me a message, give me a shout, and we'll do it again.
All right. Maybe you have to have Austin come on and tell some of the stories sometimes.
Absolutely. I would love that.
He's a little less scatterbrained than I am, so he can remember things better. So, but
anytime. We'll definitely do that. So thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Later.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.